Santin could not consult the courtly family doctor in Ladyburg, so she and Anna planned a journey to the capital town of the province of Natal, the seaport of Durban. The pretext for the journey was the perennial feminine favourite, shopping to be done. They had hoped to get away from Tirnaskral on their own, but Gary would not hear of it.
"Leave me behind, forsooth. You've been on at me, both of you, about a new suit. Well, it's a fine excuse for me to visit my tailor. And while I'm about it, I might even pick up a pair of bonnets or some other little gewgaws for two ladies of my acquaintance."
So it was, a full-scale family expedition with Shasa and his two Zulu nannies, with both the Fiat and the Ford needed to convey them all down the winding, dusty 150 miles of road to the coast. They descended on the majestic hotel on the beachfront of the Indian Ocean, and Gary took the two front suites. It needed all the ingenuity of both Anna and Santin to evade him for a few hours, but they managed it. Anna had made discreet inquiries and had the name of a doctor with consulting rooms in Point Road. They visited him under assumed names, and he confirmed what they had both known to be true.
"My niece has been a widow for 2 years," Anna explained delicately. "She cannot afford scandal."
"I'm sorry, madam. There is nothing I can do to help you," the doctor replied primly. But when Santin paid him his guinea, he murmured, "I will give you a receipt." And he scribbled on the slip of paper a name and an address. In the street, Anna took her arm.
"We have an hour before Meneer expects us back at the hotel. We will go to make the arrangements."
"No, Anna," Santin stopped. "I have to think about this. I want to be alone for a while."
"There is nothing to think about," said Anna gruffly.
"Leave me, Anna. I will be back long before dinner. We will go tomorrow." Anna knew that tone and that expression. She threw up her hands and climbed into the waiting rickshaw. As the Zulu runner bore her off in the high two-wheeled carriage, she called,
"Think all you like, child, but tomorrow we do it my way."
Santin waved and smiled until the rickshaw turned into West Street. Then she spun round and hurried back towards the harbour. She had noticed the shop when they passed it earlier, M. Naidu, jeweller. The interior was small but clean and neat, with inexpensive jewellery set out in glass-topped display cabinets. The moment she entered, a plump, dark-skinned Hindu in a tropical suit came through the bead screen from the rear of the building.
"Good afternoon, honoured madam. I am Munsami Naidu, at madam's service."
He had a bland face and thick wavy hair dressed with coconut oil until it glowed like coal fresh from the face.
"I would like to look at your wares."
Santin leaned over the glass-topped counter and studied the display of silver filigree bracelets.
"A gift for a loved one, of course, good madam. These are truly 100% pure silver, hand-manufactured by learned craftsmen of the highest caliber."
Santin did not reply. She knew the risks that she was about to take, and she was trying to form some estimate of the man. He was doing the same to her. He looked at her gloves and shoes, infallible gauges of a lady's quality.
"Of course, these trinkets are a mere bagatelle. If esteemed madam would care to see something more princely or more princessly."
"Do you deal in diamonds?"
"Diamonds, most reverend madam."
His bland, plump face creased into a smile.
"I can show you a diamond fit for a king or a queen."
"And I will do the same for you," Santin said quietly, and placed the huge white crystal on the glass counter between them. The Hindu jeweller choked with shock and flapped his hands like a penguin.
"Sweet madam," he gasped, "cover it, I beseech you. Hide it from my gaze."
Santin dropped the crystal back into her purse and turned towards the door, but the jeweller was there before her.
"An instant more of your time,"
devout madam.
He drew down the blinds over the windows and the glass door, then turned the key in the lock before he came back to her.
There are extreme penalties.
His voice was unsteady.
10 years of durance of the vilest sort, and I am not a well man. The jailers are most ugly and unkind, good madam. The risks are infinite.
I will trouble you no further, and lock the door.
Please, dear madam, if you will follow me.
He backed towards the bead screen, bowing from the waist and making wide flourishing gestures of invitation. His office was tiny, and the glass-topped desk filled it, so there was barely room for both of them. There was one small high window. The air was stifling and redolent with the aroma of curry powder.
May I see the object again, good madam?
Santan placed it on the centre of the desk, and the Hindu screwed a jeweller's loop into his eye before he picked up the stone and held it towards the light from the window.
Is it permitted to ask where this was obtained, kind madam?
No.
He turned it slowly under the magnifying lens, and then placed it on the small brass tray of the jeweller's balance that stood on the side of the desk. As he weighed it, he murmured,
IDB, madam. Illicit diamond buying. Oh, the police are most strict and severe.
Satisfied with the weight, he opened the drawer of the desk and brought out a cheap glass cutter, shaped like a pen, but with a sharp chip of bort, the black industrial-grade diamond set in the tip.
What are you going to do?
Santan asked suspiciously.
The only real test, madam, the jeweller explained. A diamond will scratch any other substance on earth except another diamond.
To illustrate the point, he drew the stylus of bort across the glass top of the desk. It screeched so that Santan's skin prickled and her teeth were set on edge, but the point left a deep white scratch across the glass surface. He looked up at her for permission, and when Santan nodded, he braced the white stone firmly against the desktop and drew the point of the stylus across it. It slipped smoothly over one plane of the crystal as though it had been lubricated, and it left no mark upon the surface. A droplet of sweat fell from the Hindu's chin and splashed loudly on the glass. He ignored it and made another stroke across the stone, putting more strength behind the stylus. There was no sound, no mark. His hand began to tremble, and this time he leaned with the full weight of his arm and shoulder as he attempted to make the cut. The wooden shaft of the stylus snapped in half, but the white crystal was unmarked. They both stared at it until Santan asked softly,
How much? The risks are terrible, good madam, and I am an excessively honest man. How much?
£1,000, he whispered.
Five,
said Santan.
Madam, dear sweet madam, I am a man of impeccably high reputation. If I were apprehended in the act of IDB,
five,
she repeated.
Two,
he croaked, and Santan reached for the stone.
Three,
he said hurriedly, and Santan held back.
Four,
she said firmly.
Three and a half, dear madam, my very last and most earnest offer, £3,500.
Done,
she said.
Where is the money?
I do not keep such vast sums of lucre on my person, good madam.
I will return tomorrow at the same time with the diamond.
Have the money ready.